Chapter 1. The Landing. Leo spun to life in late July in the restless waters of the far eastern Atlantic, about 200 miles west of Cape Verde. He was soon spotted from space, properly named and classified as a mere tropical depression. Within hours, he had been upgraded to a tropical storm. When Leo began his journey, there were three named storms ahead of him, all in a menacing row that threatened the Caribbean. All three would eventually follow their expected routes and bring heavy rains to the islands, but nothing more. From the beginning, though, it was apparent that Leo would go where no one predicted. He was far more erratic and deadly. When he finally petered out from exhaustion over the Midwest, he was blamed for $5 billion in property damages and 35 deaths. But before that, he wasted no time with his classifications, advancing swiftly from tropical depression to tropical storm to a full-blown hurricane. At Category 3, with winds of 120 miles per hour, he hit the Turks and Caicos head-on and blew away several hundred homes, killing 10. His eye weakened as he lost steam and limped across Cuba, once again as a lowly depression with plenty of rain but unimpressive winds. He turned south in time to flood Jamaica and the Caymans. Then, in a startling 12-hour period, he reorganized with a perfect eye and turned north toward the warm and inviting waters of the Gulf of Mexico. His trackers drew a line straight at Biloxi, the usual target, but by then they knew better than to make predictions. Leo seemed to have a mind of his own and no use for their models. Once again, he rapidly grew in size and speed. Warnings were posted from Galveston to Pensacola. Oil companies scurried to extract 10,000 rig workers from the Gulf and, as always, jacked up their prices just for the hell of it. Evacuation plans in 5 states were activated. As a Category 4 and veering east and west along a steady northbound trek, Leo seemed destined for a historic and ugly landfall. And then he stalled again. 300 miles south of Mobile, he faked to his left, began a slow turn to the east, and weakened considerably. For 2 days, he chugged along with Tampa in his sights, then suddenly came to life again as a Category 1. For a change, he maintained a straight course, and his eye passed over St. Petersburg with winds at 100 miles per hour. He then dumped 10 inches of rain on Orlando and 8 on Daytona Beach before leaving land as yet another tropical depression. The weary forecasters said farewell as he limped into the Atlantic. Their models ran him out to sea, where he would do little more than frighten some cargo ships. However, Leo had other plans. 200 miles due east of St. Augustine, he turned north and picked up steam as his center spun together tightly for the third time. The models were reshuffled and new warnings were issued. For 48 hours, he moved steadily along, gaining strength as he eyed the coast, as if selecting his next target. At Bay Books in the town of Santa Rosa on Camino Island, the chatter among the clerks and customers was of nothing but the storm. Indeed, across the island, as well as from Jacksonville to the south and Savannah to the north, everyone was watching Leo and talking about him nonstop. By now, most folks were well-informed and could say with authority that no Florida beach north of Daytona had taken a direct hit in decades. Another theory was that the luck had run out and it was time for the big one. The models were a hot topic. The Hurricane Center in Miami was now plotting a trajectory that sent Leo farther out to sea without landfall. But the Europeans had him coming ashore south of Savannah as a Category 4 with massive flooding in the Lowcountry.